So I'll shoot him an email tomorrow saying, hey, sorry I replaced you. Chris says, I'm replacing you. Sorry about that.
Yeah, there you go. I can't wait for that text message.
And are we going full spoilers on this?
Oh, yeah.
Damn the torpedoes? Okay,
yes.
Good.
Yes, we're going to talk about all the pros and cons. Damn, monkey, damn! Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Dan's Monkey Dance. I'm Chris Hainer.
And I'm Mark Marcus.
How are you doing, Mark?
Not bad. How are you?
Not bad. Mark is joining us this week in John's absence. We're not telling him, but he's being replaced. No, Mark is... Mark is here to discuss a subject that's close to both of our hearts. We are going to be talking about the new Star Trek movie, Into Darkness. And let me just say right up front that if you haven't seen the movie and you want to see the movie, or you don't want to be spoiled about plot points, big twists and turns in the movie, don't listen. Because we're going to spoil the shit out of this. So I guess with that, I guess we should start out by talking about how you saw the film. Did you see it in 2D, 3D, IMAX? What did you see it in?
I saw it 2D.
You saw it 2D?
Yeah, just straight get to the story. And
The people that I went with dragged me to IMAX 3D.
Wow.
And by the time we got into the theater, we were sitting about five rows to the front. And I literally could, like, if I leaned back in the chair and I had my head against the headrest, the glasses just made it so that I could see the entire screen.
Nice.
If I lifted my head at all, I missed part of it.
Yeah.
So I ended up watching it like that. And for me, like, I didn't really want to see it in 3D because for me, like, lots of action stuff loses something in 3D.
Yeah.
Because of how fast-paced it is. And this is a fast-paced movie.
It is.
So the 3D looked really nice, but it didn't always hold up.
Well, I think, you know, especially when you're dealing with, like, the immensity of outer space, you know, you get so much depth that it... The 3D kind of loses it, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, and they crafted shots specifically for 3D, knowing that this was the route they were going. So things like in the beginning on the planet with the volcano, there's those big, like, sweeping shots.
Yeah.
Up to the volcano and down into the volcano and stuff like that. And that looked really good. But as soon as you got any kind of movement, like there's a scene towards the end where Kirk... Scotty and the other guy, who we're not going to spoil yet, are having a fight in a dark hallway. In the ship. And that, you just have no clue what's going on in 3D.
I bet.
It just kind of loses it.
Yeah.
So what did you think of the movie overall?
it's kind of funny. My very first impression was I really, really didn't like it.
Okay.
But I wasn't exactly sure why. But now the more I've thought about it, the more I like it.
Okay.
And I think the reason is my first thought was it didn't feel like Star Trek to me.
Okay.
It felt like the most lavish, well-produced, incredible fan fiction movie I've ever seen.
Okay.
But I couldn't really quite place why it wasn't quite Star Trek. And then, you know, as I thought more and more about it, it kind of developed into me that Star Trek was always Vietnam, Cold War stuff.
Right.
But this is not Cold War. It's War on Terror.
Yes.
You know, contemporary. It is exactly what Star Trek would be doing right now.
Right.
So because it's so Star Trek, it seemed... not to be Star Trek at first, but yeah, I think it really, it's really interesting the way they did, you know, the stuff that they did with it.
The way that when people ask me what I thought about it, the way that I've described it is I said it's a really good sci-fi movie, but it's a really mediocre Star Trek movie. I kind of feel, and as we get into like the spoilers and stuff, it'll become more apparent, but like at one point I felt like I was watching an MTV Movie Awards spoof, especially towards the end. It just didn't feel like you could take away all the character names, make the ship look different, and put a little exposition in the front to tell you what was going on, and it could be any sci-fi film.
It didn't feel
like it needed to be a Star Trek film. And to that end, like, it was a really well-produced sci-fi film. All the graphics, all the visual effects, all the ships, all that kind of stuff looked absolutely phenomenal.
Oh yeah.
But when you get to the heart of the story, well, it's a throwback for certain.
Yeah.
But to me, it wasn't as bad as like Star Trek V, but it was like, it didn't feel like Star Trek.
I think you're kind of right in that it wasn't like the Star Trek movies.
Right.
But I think it was more like one of the early TV episodes, because it was such a commentary on current events. You had that more than just about any other actual movie. Normally, the TV shows are very, you know, they have the political, they have the message, they have that stuff going on. And the movies, they kind of throw that out and they just make it just adventure, just straight blow things up,
right?
Summer blockbuster adventure. And this one, I thought, it had that swashbuckling adventure, but because it pulled so much more from a TV show, it was maybe a weak movie, but I thought it was a fantastic episode.
Okay, yeah.
That type of feel.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I can see that. Alright, so I guess it's time to spoil some stuff here. Last time that you were on the show, it was the video podcast from MegaCon.
That's right.
In which you gave your prediction for the new movie.
Uh-huh.
And you were absolutely right for what your prediction was.
Yeah.
So anybody who doesn't want to be spoiled, turn it off now.
Yep.
For as much as they said he would not be in the film, the main bad guy was Khan.
I would not say he was the main bad guy. I think
you think Peter Weller was Robo.
He was the main bad guy.
Okay.
I was slightly wrong in my prediction that you know, Khan was a bad guy. He was there. He was, you know, definitely there. But I think, you know, Peter Weller was the one who was after, you know, he and Kirk were the ones that were kind of fighting over Khan.
Right.
Khan was still the MacGuffin.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Yeah.
So
here's my big problem with the movie.
Yep.
One of the reasons why I feel like it was mediocre is they spent the entire first movie saying everything that you know about Star Trek is now different.
Mm-hmm.
We have set this up so, and Spock even says it in the film, whatever our lives would have become has now changed. Mm-hmm. Which to me was J.J. Abrams saying there's going to be all new adventures, there's going to be all new characters, you're not going to see where we're going, it's going to be gigantic, and it's going to be Star Trek, and it's going to be fresh and exciting. And then they went and basically remade Wrath of Khan.
Here's why they had to do that.
Okay.
This was absolutely essential that it had to be Khan. It had to be the way it was. The first movie was basically about Kirk and Spock meeting, old Spock saying, you guys need to be friends because you have the potential to be just as good of friends as Kirk and Spock were in my universe.
Okay.
That was the first movie. This is the movie where it says where they do achieve that friendship. Now,
okay,
how do you show within the course of one movie this friendship that would have the exact same weight and feeling that this other friendship took 10 years to develop by showing them in an exact same situation from that other universe was the best way to show this is, they are here. They are at this point.
I see what you're saying, but I don't know. It feels like a cop-out to me. It feels like they could have done that in another way without rehashing something. And dialogue. What killed me was that they reused some dialogue.
I think where that scene failed.
Yeah.
It was that it didn't have the exact same emotional impact. You knew Kirk wasn't really going to be dead. It wasn't going to stay dead.
Right.
You know, you knew it was, you know, and I admit I watched it and, you know, you watch that original Wrath of Khan death scene and you think, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening. And this time you watch it and, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening. You know? So there was a rolling your eyes. There's a, you know, just a, But the scene wasn't meant for that, you know. Yeah, Kirk is saved, you know, 10 minutes later. You know, didn't even wait for the next movie. He's, you know, it wasn't about Kirk dying. It was about, see, they are these friends now. And you know, in terms of that, it did establish that this in terms of this that part of this universe is the same as that universe.
Okay.
So I think that's what they were going for.
Okay.
You know, yes, there's some pros and cons of doing it that way. Pros and cons. I think Spock's line was unnecessary, but it was really, really, you couldn't just have Darth Vader yelling, you know,
that's exactly what it reminded me of.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I think the reason that scene existed, the reason Khan was in that movie was so that scene could exist and mirror the previous universe to establish that friendship had been achieved.
Well, if that was their intent, I don't know if it got through to me.
Yeah,
on the
yeah,
level that it should have.
And that's why I say the first time I saw this, I walked out of the theater disgusted. But the more I've thought about it and the more it's grown on me, I realized, okay, that's what they're doing. And that's, you know, I don't know how else. And you know, I kind of, again, this a lot of the ways I approach Zortik, I use parody a lot. And I use that to control audience expectations.
Okay.
And I kind of feel like, yeah, that's exactly what this movie was doing. It, you know, they used to, you know, that was a parody of Wrath of Khan to help us with the expectation of what was going to happen.
Well, when you say parody, I mean, that's the point when I felt like I was watching an MTV.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Spoof. Because, I mean, as soon as Cumberbatch said, "I'm Khan," I was like, okay, at least let's see where they're going to take it. And like up to then, I was still kind of into it. Like, all right, he's Khan. It's not Ricardo Montalban. It's not over the top. He's playing it kind of realistically or whatever. Mm. But at the point when Kirk's laying there and Scotty comes over the PA and he says, "You better get down here.
Better hurry, yeah.
Yeah, you better hurry." And then Kirk looks at Spock and says, "Ship out of danger."
Mm-hmm.
And Spock is like, "You saved the ship." I was like, "Oh God, we're reusing lines."
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah.
And then when Kirk dies and he yells and Spock yells Khan, I was like, oh dear God.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay. And I hate when movies, especially decent movies, treat the audience like they're stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And this suffered from that with McCoy and the Tribble. At the point when he says, "I'm testing the blood on the Tribble," I was like, that's how they're going to get out of whatever situation they're going to be in.
Yeah.
I mean, it was telegraphed so badly. Yeah. Like, all you had to do was do the scene in the beginning with the little girl. And, and you know, they showed Khan taking the blood out, and they gives it to the guy, and he's like, this will save her. That's all they had to do.
True.
But they had to then go reinforce the, well, the audience isn't going to remember that.
Well, they had to show that McCoy knew that. But, yeah, it was still...
So, okay, here's a question. Mm-hmm. Does that make Kirk an augment now?
Darn good question. I was wondering that myself.
If the blood can basically bring you back to life, wouldn't it give you super strength and all the stuff that Khan has? I mean, he proved that he was a pretty good warrior, and you know, they went out of their way to kind of make Kirk look like a wuss.
Yeah.
You know, every time he got hit, he stayed down.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's one of those things, you know, do you think that's going to come up in the future? You think we're done seeing Khan?
I hope Khan has been put away for a while, at least. Well, one of the things, you know, and I heard somebody else comment about it, you know, the first movie had Scotty's long distance beaming magic.
Right.
And, you know, they were good about, you know, that didn't just go away and pretend it never happened now that they're back to normal.
Right.
They continued to use that. So, you know, it may be that, you know, this might come back to haunt Captain Kirk.
Well, and here's the thing that I liked about the movie. I love continuity between films.
Yeah.
One of my biggest pet peeves with the original Star Trek films is that, and it even follows through to the Next Generation films, mm-hmm. The bridge always changes.
Yes.
No matter what movie it is, I think the only time it didn't was between Wrath of Khan and Search for Spock, maybe? I can't remember if it changed or not, but every other
seems
film,
like it did, yeah.
And the worst of them all was the Klingon bridge between Search for Spock and Voyage Home.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, you could tell when they built the Klingon bridge in Search for Spock, they were like, there's no way we're ever going to use this again.
Right.
And then somebody went, well, no, they're going to take that back.
Yeah.
Well, shit, now we need to redesign that.
Yeah.
But J.J. Abrams is really good about continuity.
True.
And the bridge was the same. They went back to the beer factory for, like, the engineering section.
Yeah.
The only weird part about the ship was that gigantic round area that had the four bridges on it. Not the bridge of the ship, but like actual walkways where it was like multi-level. Yeah. And it was like, what the hell is that?
You know what that reminded me of? That reminded me of Star Trek V when they're in the elevator shaft and Spock uses the rocket boots to go up 99 floors on a ship that's only 23 stories high.
Yeah.
I kind of had that same feeling. It was like, okay, where in this ship is this, you know, tower, you know?
And it was...
vertical tower.
It was almost we're going to have a scene where the ship rolls on its side.
Oh, yeah.
And we have to have somewhere for people to be in danger.
Yes.
So we're going to build this big round room with multiple levels with four walkways that intersect, and Kirk will be hanging off of one.
Yeah.
And somebody went, brilliant. That's awesome. Let's do that.
It's, you know, I kind of pulled back to, okay, this is their Star Wars. You know, every Star Wars movie has to have that big vertical chamber with the bridges going across. And I want to make this like Star Wars, so let's have a big vertical chamber with bridges going across, you know? So,
you know what would have been great? Okay, if J.J. knew that he was going to be directing Star Wars at that point, if he had put in a single shot like it could be on Kirk and like be a little farther back, but you see somebody fall in front of the camera that kind of looks like Luke missing a hand. Like, just real quick. You don't even have to call any attention to it. And just as he goes by, he goes, no! And then he's gone. Oh, that would have been great.
During one of those, you know, big disaster where everybody's flying all over the place. They could have, you know, it could have been a perfect Easter egg.
Well, because they put R2-D2 in the first one.
Yeah. Yeah,
so
that's right.
Why not put Luke in this one?
That'd be great.
Yeah, like, and I liked the new parts of engineering. I even kind of bought the whatever chamber that Kirk crawls into, even though that's a big round room with a big thing sticking in the middle.
Yeah.
But, like, outside of that, when Chekhov and Scotty are walking around what's supposed to be the warp drive, I mean, at least that looked mechanical and it looked like it had a purpose.
That's true.
Kind of like they did in the first one with the beer factory, where it was big round containers and it was it looked industrial.
The beer factory that has never worked for me, though. It's always looked like a beer factory.
Well, once you know what it is.
I think maybe part of it. But still, it had this, you know, this huge, enormous, you know, expanse. And I didn't think the Enterprise was that big. I mean, you look at the shuttles flying into the shuttle bay.
Yeah.
And that shuttle bay is half of that second deck. You know, that second hull.
That's true.
You know.
Yeah.
So where is this immense factory? You know, is the Enterprise suddenly the TARDIS that's bigger on the inside?
So, you know, I could even buy that stuff. I even kind of like the fact that it starts out with the same music as the first one. Like, it does that slow build.
Yes.
To the first shot, and then even the ending kind of reminded me of the first one.
Credits were almost exactly the same, I think, which was nice. I mean, it's great.
Where Kirk walks onto the bridge, and he slaps McCoy on the shoulder.
Yeah.
You know, that was almost the same.
Well, again, that was a great kind of almost throwback to the original series that always ended with them on the bridge saying, yeah, we did good work. Let's, you know, go off to the next adventure. You know, that's very Star Trek.
Yeah.
That last scene on the bridge.
Yeah.
Here we go. Yeah.
And I liked, too, that every character seemed to have something to do this time.
It did seem like a lot better ensemble.
Like, everybody was wondering why Chekhov was running around in a red shirt during the trailers.
Yeah.
You know, they were like, oh, is he going to die? Is he expendable? Look, he's wearing a red shirt.
Yeah.
And, you know, I like the fact that they gave him more to do than to just kind of sit there.
True.
At the helm. And, like, they gave Sulu a little more to do.
Yeah, yeah. Now I did hear some complaints about, seriously, Chekhov was the most qualified person to. There were only three people on that entire ship who knew anything about engineering. You know.
Well,
it was, but you know, you got your main characters, you got
to
use them.
Well, and he's supposed to be like they make him out in the first one to be like this whiz kid who can, he can take people that are falling and beam them onto a pad. He
Good
can't
point.
Do it a second time with Kirk's with Spock's mother, but
no.
And one of the other big things, looking at my notes, that I liked about this movie is another big pet peeve of mine about the first movie was that in no universe would an organization take a cadet and make them the captain of a ship after one mission.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that always threw me. That was always the one thing at the end of the movie that even when it's on TV, I roll my eyes at because it's like, that would not happen.
Yeah.
Like Pike might stay on as captain and he might bring Kirk on to kind of train him under his wing.
Yeah.
But just to get them all on the bridge at the end, it felt like it was too sudden.
Right.
And they kind of address that in this with him being, he's got a reputation and he's got, he's like a loose cannon and he's he's doing things that he's not supposed to because there's that whole speech with Pike.
Yeah.
And that felt like they were justifying that. And that finally made me go, okay, well, they looked at the last film and they said, well, okay, these are the points that people are going to kind of have issues with, and we're going to address those. And the fact that Pike goes through it and, okay, he's going to get demoted and they're going to send him back to the academy. Like, the only thing I said there was, like, he was a captain of a ship.
Yeah.
Like if you want to demote him or something, that's okay. But the academy? That seemed a little harsh.
Yes.
Even for me. I was like, wow, yeah. Okay. You know,
yeah.
And I guess that's the thing. I guess for me, like, continuity and the story need to make sense. And spectacle, to me, spectacle in sci-fi is nothing without a good story. Because then you get movies like, I don't know, pick a bad sci-fi movie that was all spectacle. I mean, there's tons of them.
Oh, a lot of Star Trek movies, actually.
A lot of Star Trek movies.
So,
What was the Star Trek V? Or,
yeah, exactly.
That's, you know,
of, yeah.
I don't know. It's, things need to make sense, and mm-hmm. I felt like the first one had a lot of plot holes that they tried to kind of fill in this one.
Yeah.
Like, they were almost saying, look, we've got the money, we've got the time. Because the original Star Trek film was rushed into production, and then after they filmed it, they pushed it back 6 months. And at that point, they were able to finish all the effects, but they couldn't do anything about the story.
Right.
So there were things that I think they would have fixed if they had been able to go back.
True.
But, I mean, for what it is, I mean, besides my pet peeves, I guess.
I think that might be something that this one might have suffered from a little bit the other direction. It spent so long in production. You know, there's probably a lot of second guessing and over, you know, overthinking a few things.
Right.
You know, which, you know, like I say, the Kirk death scene, you know, I'm sure that went through some, is this a good idea or not? You know, back and forth. And, you know, when they went into production, that's where the coin landed. And, you know, it has pros and cons, but
I think it should have been Scotty's little buddy. His little whatever he is.
Oh, yeah.
I think he should have been the one to be sacrificed.
Well,
cause then
sure.
you could have had the scene between Scotty and this little dude. And if you're going for some,
if you were just doing parody, yes. But if your point is to show the Kirk and Spock, you know, relationship hitting that point.
Right.
And you also showed that Kirk was willing to sacrifice himself.
Right.
When making him out, you know, making him a good commander. So, you know, It had its necessity.
Yeah.
But I think it could have been done a little more subtly.
It is interesting, though, because I've talked to people at work who have seen the movie, and they're not, they didn't grow up with Star Trek like I did. And I said, well, what'd you think of the film? And they were like, oh, that was such a good film. And I said, have you ever seen Wrath of Khan? And they were like, well, isn't that what this was? I said, no. The original Wrath of Khan. And they were like, no. And so I kind of explained the parallels, and they were like, oh, really? I was like, yeah, well. And they were like, well, how do they bring Spock back? So you have to explain how there's a mind meld, and he kind of like downloads his consciousness into McCoy, and that you wait a whole nother film to see if they're going to find Spock.
Yeah.
And in this one, it was just like, hey, the Tribble came to life. Quick, get that blood.
Yeah.
What did you think of the new look of the Klingons?
They're fine. I can't say I was... You know, that's kind of one of those... It's a new universe, but how did Nero coming in force, you know, make them change, you know?
See, that was exactly my question as well. It's only 26 years later, 27 years, however long, you know, it was 25 years at the time of the first film.
Yeah.
So Kirk's been captain maybe a couple of years, 3 years at the most. So it's what, 28 years later?
Yeah. It's the same era as the original series.
So technically they shouldn't have bridges at all.
Right. Now, Nero did spend time in a Klingon with the Klingons. So he may have changed something, I guess, but you know, helped cure them of the disease that Captain Archer gave them or whatever. But so I guess, you know, that hey, it's as good an excuse as any.
You know, it's really weird sometimes, like with this movie, because there are definite ties and canon to what's happened before.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very prominent shot. I think it's when Kirk's talking to Pike or when Kirk's talking to Marcus. But there's this sliding shot across ships, like little ships on the desk. And on that desk, there's the Phoenix from First Contact.
Yeah.
And then there's the NX-01.
Yeah.
So they're saying that this is all kind of canon along with that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not. They're swinging it way back the other way with, well, the Klingons are going to be different, and this dude's going to have, like, these metal things in his ridges. And
well, you know, piercings, that's not genetic. That can be a fad for, you know, who knows. But,
you know, I like the helmets. I mean,
yeah,
I think the helmets are a nice touch because military wears helmets. They're a big military-type civilization.
Yeah.
So I get that. When he took his helmet off, I was like, what species is that?
Yeah.
Is that supposed to be a Klingon? Really?
But, you know, on the other hand, they are aliens. Making them look like guys with Fu Manchu mustaches isn't really, you know, that was always kind of weak anyway. So I can understand wanting to kind of push towards the...
Well, and you know, they've taken liberties. They got rid of the stupid ridges on the heads of the Romulans in the first film.
Yeah.
They took that back to a more original series look.
Yes.
But I didn't really feel like a redesign was totally necessary.
I didn't think the Klingons were that redesigned. I mean, the ridges of stuff were subtler, which again, that's kind of the compromise between the, you know, plain human looking and the more extreme of the later generations.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Klingons didn't bother me.
Were there any visual effects that you saw that you really liked or thought were really bad?
Trying to remember. Nothing really jumped out at me. I can't think of anything. No.
One of the things that I saw that absolutely blew me away, and it was in 3D, so I don't know if it's going to have the same impact when I see it in 2D. When they go to Kronos and they're in the round looking Lost in Space ship.
Oh yes.
There's a shot where it comes into frame, and I can't remember if they've already been chased by the Klingons or they're about to be chased. But it comes from, like, way back in the frame, and it comes and settles right in front of the frame. And there's, in 3D, it's this gigantic expanse with the ship in front of you, and you can see the characters inside the ship.
Okay.
And in 3D, it played beautifully, because, like, as the ship comes in, they're what's in focus. So you're kind of seeing almost the ship extruding out in front of them. That was absolutely fantastic. Like, I know that, like, these days every film needs to have a visual effect that nobody's ever seen before.
Yeah.
And this was that shot for me of you're waiting the whole movie for something really cool. Maybe it's going to be something at, like, in the trailer they tease this one of the ships coming down and destroying Alcatraz. And I was like, well, maybe that's going to be the big cool scene. But when this ship flies in, even though it's subtle and it's just the ship coming up and coming in the frame, I was like, wow, that is fucking cool.
This visually, you can't argue this is a good movie. The Enterprise coming up out of the water.
Yeah.
Why was it underwater? I don't know. But but that was a cool shot.
Yeah, why couldn't it have been in orbit?
I don't know. And how did it get there if without them?
I kind of wanted there to be some kind of tie-in with whatever alien race that was. Like, had that been, like, the Ferengis or somebody that comes back later on in, like, the Next Generation era kind of give them problems, like, and they be the cause of it. I think that would have been a cool little tie-in.
I could see that, yeah. I think there were a lot of missed opportunities here in this movie, too. I have no idea why Carol Marcus was in this movie at all.
Well, because she's part of the Khan mythology, and not in Space Seed, but, you know, in the Wrath of Khan. And
but why not go with who was the character in Space Seed? MacGyver's, was it, Lieutenant MacGyver's? Wasn't she the one that?
The one that falls in love with him.
Yeah. Then you actually have that Khan, some tension there. You have that. Is she with him or against it, you know?
Well, and not that there's a really strong female lead in Star Trek. I mean, they try to give stuff to Uhura this time, where she's like the big badass beaming onto whatever that ship was over San Francisco.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and she's with them when they go down to Kronos and stuff. But Carol Marcus in this had to be the weakest female character in any Star Trek movie.
Have you read, I think Felicia Day did a blog about the female roles in this movie and or lack thereof. And it was really, you know, what was with her walking on the shuttle and taking her clothes off? Did that have any?
And Damon Lindelof, I guess, apologized for that.
Yes, I heard that. But
he basically said that, it was there. They're not really sure why.
Yeah.
They've had Kirk in his underwear, so why not? They had Uhura in her underwear in the first one.
True.
But it served served the story. She was coming back to her dorm room. She was getting changed out of her uniform.
Exactly.
This wasn't a, come on the shuttle. Hey, I know you're kind of a womanizer and you've got kind of a reputation about you. Here, let me take all my clothes off.
Yes, yes. Well, even not only that, but just even when like all the security heads were meeting with all the ship captains and first officers with Admiral Marcus.
Right.
None of them were female.
There was a female in the room, wasn't there?
Well,
because there's a shot of when the attack happens, one of the women gets hit.
Maybe. I'm just going off her blog. She said there wasn't any, but I couldn't remember. But you know, but still, it was, you know. Well, did you, I don't know if you read my my blog about Dr. McCoy.
I did,
and I think the having Uhura as the, you're kind of replacing Dr. McCoy.
Yeah,
it kind of seems like that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to make her the third component. But rather than being the emotional counterpoint to Spock, just being basically defined as his girlfriend kind of weakens both characters.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, I agree. I mean, that the argument on the shuttle or whatever, the ship, where Kirk, they were like dressing down Kirk about like, hey, we're talking here. It was like, all right, that's not, well, one, that's not the way it would happen. Like, two, they're not going to argue about their relationship. Like,
if these are responsible human beings. No.
Yeah. They've got a mission and they're trying to accomplish something.
Yeah.
Why would you take, especially if you know there's a squabbling couple on board?
Yeah.
Why would you take both of them?
Yeah.
Because then you're just putting both of them at risk. Yeah. I mean, and Carol Marcus, I mean, all she did was scream at one point.
Yes.
Like when she watches her father die and Khan breaks her leg or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, she wasn't there for anything other than here's a character that you've met in a past movie who is going to be, well, maybe not in this universe, but is the mother of Spock's or of Kirk's son.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I don't know if maybe that her getting undressed was the hint of, hey, they had sex in the shuttle and that's where the kid comes from.
If so, that was pretty lame.
Yeah.
Foreplay. Yeah.
Yeah. And then like I did like McCoy going down to the planet to disarm the torpedo. I know they wanted steady hands, but I was like, that's not really what you would do with him.
Well, again, you know, when you, if you only have think that you only have seven people on this ship, I guess he is the only person qualified.
Again, like an engineer, somebody who's built something, not not somebody who.
There has to be a weapons expert on this.
Yeah, I mean, like even in the original series, McCoy doesn't really cut anybody open. He's using like.
Yeah.
Little probes and scanner things and things you put on their head to make a new kidney grow or whatever.
Like, right.
You're not a surgeon in 21st century terms.
Right.
And it felt again like, you know, we need to use McCoy somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to have his big payoff kind of at the end, but we have to have him do something.
Yeah. And I did think McCoy had a better role, but it was a better role made mainly because there was more medical stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Poor McCoy.
Yeah.
And Carl Urban does such a good DeForest Kelly.
He's amazing. I agree.
Like, and I understand, like, Chris Pine doesn't want to do a William Shatner impression.
No.
Like, there's... You have to have Chekhov with the stupid accent, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, they could have updated that a little bit. They didn't have to say, you know, the thing where he couldn't pronounce Victor in the first one.
Yeah, the computer didn't recognize his accent. Yeah.
Yeah, because I've never met a Russian person that actually sounds like that.
No.
So, like, you're kind of, like, I understand, okay, that's kind of the character thing, but... Hearing Carl Urban do McCoy, like, they could have totally said, just be yourself. You don't have to, like, say anything, because Pine's not going to do Shatner, so don't even worry about DeForest Kelly. But he inhabits that so well.
I don't think it's just... It's not just an impersonation, though. He's made that character. He is McCoy.
Yeah.
You know? He's still distinct enough that it's him. But it's very recognizably that character.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, he's one of those actors, I think he's kind of underappreciated.
Yeah.
In Hollywood. I mean, because most of the stuff that he's done, I don't know if Dread is your speed or not.
But I've been meaning to see that. I've heard great things about it.
It's violent, but he's friggin' phenomenal in it.
Yeah.
He is what should have been in the Stallone movie.
Yeah.
And even he can even carry a film like Riddick. Like even in Chronicles of Riddick, he was able to take that character and turn it into something that was memorable.
Right.
And he seems to do that in everything he does.
Mm-hmm.
Even like Lord of the Rings, where he didn't have a huge part. You know, that's when you see him in something else and you're like, oh, that's the dude from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like he carries that presence with him and he was great.
He was great in Lord of the Rings. Cause he was kind of an ordinary guy. He didn't have a gimmick, you know, he wasn't a special creature or something, you know, he was just a guy, but he still was so distinct.
Yeah. And he's going to be doing, I guess he's going to be doing a TV show on Fox in the fall.
Ooh.
And I'm really hoping that doesn't kill his career.
True.
I'm hoping that he's able to still do movies and.
Well, I think, you know, he's got a strong enough resume going into it that he should be able to fall back on that, you know, even if it is a failure. But
I hope so.
Yeah, but yeah, he was great.
Yeah.
And Simon Pegg, yeah. I was kind of iffy about him. I love Simon Pegg, but he really in the first one he really wasn't Scotty to me.
Right.
And this one. he's still, you know, he's not the James Doohan Scotty.
No.
But I really liked what he did this time. He really sold me.
Was it the way he acted, or was it what they did with his character?
I think mostly what they did with his character.
How he, he didn't walks away because of his stand on the torpedoes. And
yeah. Yeah, I think that was a big part of it. But yeah, that felt better to me.
Yeah, I agree. And they gave him more to do than just sitting in engineering.
Yes.
You know, him sneaking on to the big dreadnought ship.
Yes.
You know, they need him there in order to open the airlock or whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, he is the comic relief for the movie.
And I think that's what's really, it is very different, because the James Doohan Scotty wasn't just the comic relief.
No, and they...
He would take command of that ship, and he was in command, and you knew, he had your back, and he was a commander.
Yeah.
This guy, you know, Simon Pegg, I can't see taking the bridge chair, you know?
No. And it was nice, speaking of James Doohan, it was nice to see that they brought his son back for the transporter room.
Oh, yes.
It's those little touches,
yeah.
People that you constantly see that makes it a universe.
Yeah.
It's not every single time there's a new person.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in that area.
And the security guy, too, the cupcake.
Yeah. I didn't understand what was with the guy on the bridge that had, a computer in his head.
Good question. Empire Strikes Back reference, I guess.
I felt like it was almost a nod to Star Trek the Motion Picture of Lieutenant Ilea. There was a, you know, but instead of the thing in her throat, it was this big thing on the back of his head, and he was kind of robotic. And
no, I immediately thought, what was the name, Lobot? Something from Empire Strikes Back.
Are they trying to do this is the prototype Data?
Maybe.
Was this an android that they're trying out on Federation ships? That was one of the things that seemed a little out of place to me. All of a sudden it was, they cut to this guy and he's got this computer voice and you're like, well, that's kind of weird. And then maybe 5 minutes later, they shoot him from the other side, and you see this big, computer thing in the back of his head, and it's like, okay, when did the Enterprise get a droid?
Yeah, I guess, I don't know, they're just trying to do science fiction-y look stuff, throw some stuff in there. They spoke to a futurist, and they said that
Yes. what was I going to say? Was there anything else? Why do you think they had to kill Pike? That was the other thing that I put on my list. I understand the story reasoning of here's the thing that's going to kind of make Spock question his feelings. He does that thing where he mind melds with him at the moment of his death, and he's like, I never want to feel that way again.
Yeah.
Which just sets up the, hey, your best friend just died. You're going to feel that way again, and you're going to get so angry you're going to yell some dude's name. But Pike is such a good character for that universe.
He is. I think the reason they killed him was it took Kirk's training wheels away. You know, he was kind of the ultimately supporting Kirk, and now, you know, Kirk's learned to stand on his own and he doesn't have that anymore, so now it's all up to him. So that's my impression.
Couldn't they have done an Iron Man 3 thing where they just put him in a coma and then at the end he wakes up and he's around for part 3?
Put him back in a wheelchair, make him a vegetable.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
That was something that threw me. Like, the last time you see him, he's in a wheelchair.
Oh.
And he's back walking around with a cane, but it's like...
Yeah, he's getting better.
You kind of want the Pike in the wheelchair that doesn't move and it just has the blinking lights.
Yeah, but this is the future, you know. They have Obamacare now, so...
Yeah. You know, no mention of the millions of people that were killed at the end when the big ship comes flying into San Francisco.
Oh, I'm sure that there'll be Senate hearings about that, but...
It kind of threw me in the beginning too when the guy with the daughter in the hospital, he blows up the secret laboratory or whatever, and they give the report, and it's this gigantic explosion in like the middle of London, and the report is like 26 people died.
Yeah,
it's like, really? That seems awful big for 26 people. Well, I guess they have better, like, bomb protection.
Yeah, yeah. Probably. And, you know, it's London. Who goes there anymore?
Well, they got a lot of big buildings. Apparently somebody.
True. True. But, yeah.
Let's see. What else do I have on my list? So one of the things, I guess, one of the big things that when, for some reason, the group that I was with thought this was a Marvel movie, so we had to sit all the way through the credits.
Ah.
Because they really thought there was going to be some kind of weird scene at the end.
Right.
So while we're sitting there, there was a group of bigger geeks than us sitting behind us, and they were arguing because Khan wasn't Indian. And I was wondering how you felt about that.
Darn good question. I was kind of reading something about that online and talking about the pros and cons about, you know, about the political correctness of not making him an ethnicity.
Okay.
You know, I mean, Carlo Montalban wasn't Indian either, but...
Right. Well, exactly.
I think, you know, there was so much by turning him into a terrorist. I mean, basically he was Osama bin Laden, basically.
Right.
Was kind of what they were trying to make him into.
Right. He's and the I mastermind. Think, he gets somebody else to blow up the first.
Well, he's the guy that, you know, Starfleet was giving arms to and helping out, and then surprised when he kind of turns on us and, you know. And I think making that Eastern would have, you know, almost been a little bit of overkill in terms of racial profiling.
Well, when it was brought up to me by somebody who I went to see it with, and he was like, well, that's a good point. He's not Indian in this. I said, they never told you his backstory. The only reason you know his backstory is because you watch Space Seed.
You know, the other point is he's been working with Starfleet Intelligence for how long? How much, you know, facial augmentation, you know, did he go through some sort of disguise program working for them, you know, to avoid being a historical figure, you know?
True. But, I mean, I don't, like, I didn't really think that there was, and the dudes behind us were really upset about this.
Yeah.
Like, they were screaming about it. And I was just thinking, it's not relevant to the story.
No, it's really
all
not.
All you need is somebody to be the person that they're after.
Yeah.
You know, I was even surprised when they talked to old Spock in that one scene and Spock, like, says his full name.
Yes.
Like, you didn't even need that. Like, all you had to do, all he had to do was say, Khan was the worst person we ever faced.
Yeah.
And we paid dearly for it. Mm-hmm. You know, like... Like, if you're going to change the character that much, don't, you know, you don't have to hold on to that past.
Right.
You can then pretty much, like, I appreciate that you're going along with the whole thing of, like, they were, like, augmented people who were used by the government or whatever and then sent out into space or whatever the little backstory he gives is.
Yeah.
And that they're trying to hold on to, like, the eugenics war and all that stuff from tying it back to the original series. But
right.
It's kind of, I mean, canon now is, like, the eugenics wars never really happened.
Good point.
You know, like, all that stuff, when they were making Star Trek, that was, what, 30 years in the future?
Yeah. Like, the eugenics wars were what, 91, 92,
yeah,
something like that?
Something like that. So, like, that seemed like a long way away. You know, they were thinking we'd have flying cars by 2000.
Yeah.
So it wasn't too far-fetched that there'd be augmented people and running around and there'd be a war over it.
Mm-hmm.
But while I appreciate them trying to hold on to that, at the same time, you know, give something else. Like,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, you know, J.J. Abrams has said this is not just a movie for Star Trek fans. This is a movie for the general public.
Right.
And the general public is not going to have watched, maybe they haven't watched all of the original series and then Next Generation and, you know, the animated series in there and
yeah,
followed 7 years of Deep Space Nine and then tried to struggle through Voyager and then,
yeah,
you know, they're going to be going in with this, well, kind of like the first movie, and this is going to be bigger and more explosions and
mm-hmm.
We get a new bad guy and, oh, it's this guy named Khan. Well, wasn't there a movie named Khan before?
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to, I understand that because my defense, I've always defended, Jar Jar Binks in episode one as being for kids.
Yes.
Like Jar Jar Binks is not written for adults.
Of course.
Matter
not.
Of fact, Star Wars wasn't written for adults.
Mm-mm.
Like, it's all a kids' movie. It's all a Saturday matinee. It's all to get little kids to laugh. And
yep.
You have to boil it down to the lowest common denominator, and that's the general public who's not a Star Trek fan.
Right.
And I appreciate that, and I appreciate the way J.J. Abrams has kind of tried to pull this all together. I just kind of wish it had been a little more original.
I think that's exactly why some of the Khan stuff does fall a little flat. You know, he's trying to be original, but he does have the character introduce himself as Khan as if we all knew who that is.
Right. Right. The big close up on his face and he's like, "I'm Khan."
Yeah.
And you're like, "Okay."
Yeah.
But I mean, if you look at the story overall, like, why did Khan go to Kronos? Because the reason in the story is because that's the one place they can't go.
Mm.
Well, okay, but if you were to go to the moon, chances are they're not going to know where you're going.
Yeah.
Like, they've got the thing that says, oh, Scotty's thing says it went here. But at the end of the day, the only reason to introduce Kronos is to introduce the Klingons that maybe they're going to be the big baddies in three.
Exactly.
And they're setting this up as a, you know, this is why the wars come in, or this is why they don't like us. But in actuality, that could have just been all dialogue.
True.
Like, well, it says that he's on Kronos, but we don't really think he's there. Well, Kronos is where the Klingons are, and there's a war coming, and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And I know that that's Marcus's big, his big reason for sending the Enterprise out with a broken ship. And
well, again, that kind of creates the Osama bin Laden kind of,
he's gone and we can't
overlap.
Find him.
Well, he's gone in this country, so now we can attack this country, right? So, you know, that was kind of justifying us going after the Klingons.
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know.
Yeah, when you make the analogy of him as Osama bin Laden, it opens some things up.
Exactly. Exactly. This is a movie about terrorism, and it's about, you know, Starfleet's overreaction to terrorism. The whole concept is about, you know, over-militarizing in the name of defense.
Right.
And put in that perspective, you know, making that kind of social commentary, it's a totally different movie.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting. You kind of mentioned my original theories about, you know, whether Khan was the antagonist or the MacGuffin. And I think that's kind of the fundamental point of how you view this movie. If Khan is the antagonist, it's kind of a weak movie.
Right.
If Khan is the MacGuffin, and it is about, you know, Admiral Marcus's attempts at using his existence to justify creating a war, and therefore, you know, this kind of social commentary thing, it's a totally different movie.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So now I'm going to have to go back and think about this again. Because I was so sure it wasn't a good Star Trek movie. And now, talking to you, I'm just not sure anymore.
Well, it has its weak points. There are definitely some things. And, you know, I need to see it again, basically. I have to see it again. And, you know, I will, you know, question if what they were trying to do, how effective it was.
Right.
But I think I understand what they were trying to do. And I think that there were some right decisions in there. I think it was, effectively done, just, a little more subtle than, you might expect on a first viewing.
Yeah. Yeah. Real quick before we wrap up, since we're on, we're talking about movies that have some weird twists. Did you see Iron Man 3?
I did.
What did you how did you feel about what they did with the Mandarin?
I have to confess, I knew nothing about the Mandarin.
Okay.
I know nothing about, I don't even know Iron Man other than the movies.
Okay.
So for me, I got a kick out of it. I enjoyed it. was that, I assume that is different than the way he is in the comic?
In the comics, he is Iron Man's Lex Luthor. He's his Joker.
Okay.
He is the big bad guy. The 10 rings that he wears gives him mystical abilities to control minds, to have strength, and do all this weird stuff.
Huh.
They're cosmic rings or something. And one of the things that they had originally said going into the first movie was they didn't know how they would do the Mandarin because he's kind of a supernatural character.
Yeah.
But when you have a movie like Avengers that's dealing with people from other planets and aliens, you could have done the Mandarin.
Yeah.
Like the way that it was meant to be. And I just felt like it was kind of another cop-out. Like you're taking the big bad guy and you're marketing the entire movie around this being the bad guy. And he's only in the film for 15 minutes, maybe.
Yeah, probably.
And half of that is out of the character that you're expecting it to be. So I don't know.
Yeah.
That's another one of those, like, I'm going to have to see it again and kind of look at it and really decide how I feel about it.
Yeah, you know, like I say, not knowing any of that, just looking at it as that was a neat twist, and you know, basically it's a big, it's a nice roller coaster ride.
Yeah, we'll see what they do with that one too.
Now, I am hoping that is the end of the Iron Man franchise.
You're gonna see Iron Man again though in Avengers.
In Avengers, I'm hoping that he's just like an advisor. He's the equipment guy. He's kind of their Q, almost, you know.
Well, you know, the one part of me that says no to that is the fact that War Machine can operate a suit without having a arc reactor in his chest.
True.
Like he's got an arc reactor that powers the suit, and that's enough.
Right, but story arc wise,
he's
come full circle. He's done his, you know, his thing, and
yeah.
You know, this was a nice. This felt kind of like the last Batman, The Dark Knight.
The big what the fuck moment in that for me was, so he spends the whole second movie looking for something to power the arc reactor that won't kill him.
Oh.
So he creates a new element that nobody's ever seen before. Brand spanking new. And at the end of this one, he just has an operation to get the shrapnel out.
Yeah.
And then pitches what possibly could be a cash cow for Stark.
Yeah.
Stark Industries into the ocean.
Yeah.
And is like, bye-bye. All right. We're done. And it's like, okay. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just comic book movies are good, and sometimes they're just bad.
True. It's, you know, and that's a problem, I think, you know, when you get these big, over-the-top, you know, superheroes, super technology worlds, getting it to fit.
Yeah.
You know, the human, getting the human experience to balance that, you know, sometimes you got to be a little silly with the super stuff,
right,
to bring it back into normality.
What other films are you looking forward to?
Man of Steel is looking good.
Did you see the new trailer?
The newest one? No, not yet.
Oh my God. I'll have to go watch that.
Okay.
I was on the fence about Man of Steel. After Superman Returns.
Yeah.
And like emo Superman, I was like, I still don't want to see another origin story about Superman.
True.
And I'm hoping that they tell it in a way where it doesn't feel like an origin story.
Yes.
Flashbacks, little things here and there, that's fine. Yeah. I don't want the first hour of the movie to be an origin, though.
Right.
So I was kind of on the fence until I watched the new trailer today.
Okay.
And when I saw the new trailer, I'm completely hooked. I can't wait till it comes out.
Nice.
It's what I'm expecting. The movies that I've seen so far, what I was hoping they'd be,
Yeah. This
is the thing that I think is going to be what I'm hoping it'll be.
Good.
And then I guess the next one is Pacific Rim that I'm kind of looking forward to.
That's right. That's the summer, isn't it?
That's the summer.
I've seen a little bit about that, not too much, but yeah.
Giant robots.
Can't go wrong there.
You know, fighting monsters. Yeah. You really can't. Is there anything else that you're...
It seems like there's something else coming this summer, but I can't think of what... You know, what do you got? The Thor and Captain America.
Yeah, that's not until...
Summer.
Summer movie.
Lone Ranger is kind of one of those maybe.
You know what? I have no desire to see that whatsoever.
Yeah. I'm hesitant, but it's one of those maybe, but I want to hear some reviews first.
I don't really think there was ever a need for a Lone Ranger movie. I can't picture anybody ever going, we have to have a Lone Ranger movie.
I think... Well, when you think of a Western hero,
yeah,
who else is there? I mean, in terms of that kind of, you know, that same kind of iconic,
right,
hero. So, I mean, if you want to do a Western genre of, you know, he's like any other, you know, he's a comic book hero without the comic book. You know, if you're going to do, you know, comic book movies are the thing.
Right.
He's a way of doing something. He's a way of doing a comic book movie without DC or Marvel.
Okay.
You know, or have somebody with the same kind of name recognition as a Superman, but not.
Right.
Not having that.
The other sci-fi film that's coming out this summer is Elysium, from the guy that did what was that movie? District 9.
Yeah. Yes.
With Matt Damon. That looks phenomenal.
That does look good.
So, lots of things to look forward to.
True.
You know, maybe we make this a regular thing on the show.
Yeah. Yes.
World War Z is the other one.
Oh, yes.
Kind of on the fence about. Not really sure how that's going to work.
True. Could be good.
Yeah.
And yeah, but hey, but you know who wrote the I guess wrote the novel was Mel Brooks's son.
For
World War Z.
For World War Z. Okay.
If I remember correctly, I think I'm pretty sure I'm right there. But yeah, okay. It was Mel Brooks' son wrote it, so That's interesting.
That seems like a departure from Blazing Saddles.
Well,
my dad does comedy, I do zombies.
Yeah, now there may be a dance number in there, so I don't know. You know, bunch of zombies singing, putting on the Ritz, you know.
That would be awesome.
I'd pay for that.
There you go. yeah, we'll have to, as the summer progresses, we'll have to do this.
Yeah.
With movies, because I'm sure John won't see anything in a timely manner. He waits for a lot of stuff on DVD, so.
Ah, well, you know, we could, you know, get online and do that timely review of Casablanca or something.
There was a movie, we were talking about something a couple months ago where I said, have you seen this movie? And he said, well, no, I bought it. I haven't watched it yet, though. I was like, good God, come on. It's like a year old. So, yeah, we'll have to do this again.
Okay, yeah. So,
when next time something comes out that we want to review.
Sounds good.
We'll tell him to take a week off. And he'll love that.
And then, you know, tell him that we made up a bunch of rumors about him.
All right. Well, if you want to get in touch with Mark or I or John, who's not here, you can always send us an email at info@dancemonkeypodcast.com. Go check out Mark's work at entireprizes.com. Is that right?
Entire Prize Enterprises.
Entireprizeenterprises.com. And your blog is there where you talk about McCoy and all that?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Follow us on Twitter at Dance Monkey Pod. Rate us on iTunes. Mark, do you do any other podcasts that you want to plug?
Well, keep an eye out for Podwarp 1999. We haven't recorded in a while, but we keep talking about it. But hit the website, podwarp1999.com, and see all of our stuff there.
What do you guys talk about on that?
Usually we start off talking about science fiction comics, and then we just kind of trail off into talking about movies and going off on tangents mostly, but
okay.
It's fun.
All right, so if you like Dance Monkey Dance and you like the stuff that we do about TV shows and movies, then give Podwarp 1999 a try.
Yeah.
So write us, let us know what you think. If you want us to do more of these, it doesn't really matter. We're going to do more, so if you don't like them, you can just skip those weeks. So, until next week, this is Chris.
This is Mark.
Have a good week.